I'm a guy from the mountains, so we're sort of slim, small-boned people. Because we're going up mountains all the time. Steep mountains, you know. And but the second part was to honor my body and start to think about what I put in my body, what I do to my body. You know, so those were big steps for me, important steps to be where I am today. Because I consider myself to be healthy today. And the word health is referring to mind, body, and spirit. But to achieve that, first accept my body. In 1976 and 77, I had stomach ulcers. And they used to call it the worry sickness, you know. And my teacher told me to talk to my body. He says, tell your tummy you're sorry for what's going on there, because I had stomach ulcers. So I took his advice, and I talked to my tummy. I said, I'm sorry, tummy, for what's going on there. I'll do what I can. So I went to the doctor, changed my diet, you know, and worked on getting rid of the stomach ulcer. But to do that, I had to accept that it was my fault, what was going on there, and that I have to honor my body. And that's when I got into fasting, juice fasting, you know, to cleanse my body.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the longest juice fast I went in was 10 days. And because I wanted to purify my body. I wanted to be a pure human being. You know, that was a goal I had. You know, so I started to learn about my body. And I think that's one of the problems today, is people don't understand their own body. For instance, that there's over 600 muscles in our body. And there's twin muscles. There's a left-hand muscle for the little finger, right hand, you know, all these muscles. And we get them to work together, to be strong. And I learned that in long-distance running. First off, you have to build your strength, then your endurance, then think about speed after that. You have to go in that order. So that's what I started to follow. But one of the things you said was interesting to me was that you were a boxer. I used to have a boxing club.
Mm-hmm.
And young men to be boxers as part of my addictions program. You know, get the young guys quit drinking and doing drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And it was successful for the ones that came. I remember one of them after 6 months, he was saying, he said, Jerry, I used to think I was tough. But after being with you for 6 months, he says, now I can say I'm strong. But I wasn't tough. You know, in fact, I was out of shape. I was acting tough. You know, to see them, because we're developing their muscles from their head to their feet in boxing. Like develop their neck muscles, for instance, so they can absorb a blow. How to hold their chin. Then I took karate, and I learned more about the body, about what it can do and what it cannot do. But that's what got me out of depression, was physical movement. Because I was prone to depression because of what happened at the residential school. So as I got more involved in these, I guess they're individual sports, karate, running, biking. You know, I do team sports like fastball and soccer, volleyball, and loved competition, you know. So what's, I guess, your biggest takeaway? Because you were involved in all kinds of sports. What was it doing for you?
Yeah, I think there's just so much, like you mentioned, the competitive aspect. Because, I played hockey, baseball, well, softball, actually. Yeah. And just trying to think of what else. I think those are like the real organized ones. And then, you know, I just played all manner of sports as well, just trying them trying them all out. Tennis, loved tennis for a while. And so I think like there, for sure, early on, there was that challenge aspect of, you know, of overcoming some, your opponent in a way, but in this healthy way, and this way that wasn't really, you know, truly a, that didn't really have aggression at the heart of it. It was like that, the sporting aspect of it, but then also the health, at the health and wellness part of it really spurred me on as well, because I didn't really understand type 2 diabetes for a long time. And I just knew that my dad had diabetes, and my mushroom and cookum had diabetes, and they died from complications related to it. Mm. And, you know, you just hear that diabetes is rampant in our communities. And so I just kind of thought, like, am I going to get diabetes? Like, or when am I going to get diabetes? So I just thought it was like maybe something that's just going to happen. But I didn't understand that, you know, there's ways to avoid it, and by being maintaining your health and fitness, and watching what you put into your body. And yeah, so for a long time, I think that there was an aspect of sort of running away from diabetes that that I thought about, because I remember at times, you know, getting out of shape and then being like, oh, I got to get, you know, got to get fit again. And I start running, and what would be motivating was like, okay, like, you know, I want to be healthy, and I don't want to get diabetes. So, and that was a big reason for a long time. And I'm just thinking about what you were saying about, you know, being mindful of what we put in our bodies as well, and taking that responsibility. And yeah, I think just knowing, like, you know, getting back into sports when I did, it was a big part of it was because I wanted to, you know, take ownership of my body and my health. So that's, yeah, I'd say that's what was motivating. And then now I think it's just, you know, I've learned quite a bit about the way that metabolism works and the way that diabetes works. And so I know for myself that, you know, as long as I do certain things that I can avoid getting diabetes. So that's good to know, like that there are things that we can do to avoid this. What motivates me now is just to continue my personal development as an athlete as far as I can go. Like, I know I'm not going to become a professional or anything like that at my age, but I know that I can still reach personal bests and still win races and, you know, still do cool races that, you know, develop and make these memories of the events. And so those are things that motivate me now.
Yeah. You know, the competitive part, I think we all carry, and a lot of people will deny it. You know, but we want to push ourselves and see how good we can be. Because in my marathons, when I ran marathon, I knew I wasn't going to, like, I was in Barcelona running a marathon. And the Kenyans and Ethiopians were there. And you see them, they're lapping us, and they're running like they're running a sprint, you know? And I'm just like, oh, these incredible athletes. But I would run, so I would think about my age group. Where am I going to place in my age group? You know, because after my 50s, I started doing long distance. I remember I finished the BMO in Vancouver. Vancouver Marathon. And I looked at the sheet, you know, because they have the results after. My head went down. My wife said, what's the matter? I said, look where I come in with my age group. And she says, you're in the top 50. You know, there's thousands of runners. Mm-hmm. I said, no. And she says, the top 50 of your age group. I says, oh, okay. So sometimes we can take things a little overboard or, you know, be realistic. Just the very fact that I ran over 50,000 steps, because that's how many steps in a marathon, that I could do that. You know, and I'm okay to celebrate that. But I get the feeling. I remember the first big 10K run in Vancouver, 50,000 runners. It's just amazing, the Vancouver Sun Run, to stand amidst all those runners. And we all fundraise for something. And we're all together. And it was an incredible feeling for me to be amidst, like you're saying, I wouldn't see that many indigenous runners. At marathons and 10Ks, there's getting to be way more now. And I'd be like the only one. But to feel that massive energy moving together was incredible.
Mm.
All ages, all sizes, all kinds of people, you know.
Yeah.
It is just amazing. You know, it's a wonderful experience. And I'd suggest people give it a try. And I would announce wherever I'm going, hey, I'm running a marathon. And I was fundraising for cancer and diabetes. So people would sponsor me. So much a mile or something, you know, and fundraise. But that's a part that, you know, when we talk about methods for training, the first part was to first accept our body, then honor it, respect that body, love that body. From there, what you do, like what you're doing now, is your way of life. You bike, you do other things. That's a way of life, of moving in life. And that's what I want to promote on these podcasts, a wellness way of life. For all of us. Because when I was thinking, reflecting about our people before, physically strong, because they were getting all their own food with their own two hands. You know, they were hunting, fishing, picking berries, tanning hides, you know, make the clothing. They were doing it all. And they were fit. And it wasn't a competition, it was life. It is to live a good life. And it seems we have opportunities now, because we don't have to cut wood anymore, pack water. We just turn a dial. It gets warm in the house. So it seems to me we'd have more opportunity now to train, to get out there, and because we don't have to worry about hunting the moose for this year's supply of meat. Are catching hundreds of salmon for the winter. People still do that, and I'm glad they do. You know, but what are we going to train for now? And I think it's for mental health today. That if we get our body breathing deep from exerting ourselves, when you're running or you're biking or you're moving your body, playing tennis or table tennis, whatever it is, your muscles in your lungs start to move. Your heart rate goes up. You start to sweat. Your glands open up. You know, and then there's movement. And that's good for mental health.
Yeah, well, I think the mental health can really be expanded to like the spiritual health as well. And when we think about metabolic syndrome and diabetes and obesity and the things that we see affecting our people a lot, we see the root cause of intergenerational trauma and the residential school and things like that. And, you know, people that have that a lot of worry in their life and, you know, living with all that stress and excess of cortisol. And, you know, that can really be generalized as, you know, had a mental health issue, but it's a whole body issue as well, because that's, you know, taking place in the, in your endocrine system and all that. And with exercise, that's like the way to begin to treat it. And with training and finding something that, that you can do to get out and move is a way to, yeah, to have an outcome that is positive mental health. And I think that's, something that we should be talking about more often as well, because so many times someone has diabetes and they just get, you know, metformin or insulin, and maybe the doctor says, oh, you should get a little exercise and stop eating carbohydrates. But there's not enough effort, I think, into, you know, our ways that we know of being out on the land and getting healthy that way, that even if we can't get salmon and get the foods that we once did, like you said, we do have time to, that we can focus on things like training, and, you know, that it can be expanded to not be looked at just as training, but as just being healthy.
Exactly. You know what you're saying? I've been trying to find words for that, because when I talk to people about training, they seem to think about sports, you know, to be a good athlete. No, it's about being a good human and giving your body a gift by moving. And it doesn't have to be running. You can power walk, speed walk, you know, do things to challenge your body. Seems very few people challenge their body today. You know, we have a lot of process addictions, watching TV, computers, iPads, phones. You know, we get addicted to that. That's a substance, a process addiction, something we do over and over again. So, but to find a way to enjoy moving your body, just for the sake of stopping diabetes or arthritis, because some of those things are going to come, but you can handle it. You can still have a quality life if you exercise, go out and move. Like I tell people, movement is medicine for your body, for your mind, for your spirit, for your heart, if you move. Yeah, so Elijah, you know, we come to the time now. I really want to thank you for taking time out of your life in Paris, France. I was over there and I went to the Eiffel Tower and I went to Nice and different places, you know, and enjoyed myself over there. You know, there's good human beings everywhere you go. But, you know, like you mentioned a bit about some of the challenges our people go through, obesity, diabetes, depression. But that's with all societies, not just ours. But if you are going to give some advice to some young men out there about their bodies and about their life, what kind of advice would you give them?
Yeah, I think about that a lot. And, you know, I did some volunteer work with this mobile health clinic in Victoria. And like you said, you know, these problems aren't just strictly for Indigenous people. But I was intrigued or surprised that there were so many young men, you know, at my age, still kind of young, late 30s, that that were accessing the clinic. And it seemed to be like most of the people that came there were people around, were men around my age. And, you know, I just started thinking about people like my brothers who struggle with their health, and, you know, it can be a challenge to offer advice or to do anything to try to help them. But what I think about lately is that, you know, your health is important and you are important, and your health is important to your mind, your body, and your spirit, and your heart, and to your family and your community. And to who you are as an Indigenous person. And I think about what my great-grandfather said, in that, you know, it's only us as Indigenous people that can break the treaty that we have. So I think about the fact that we have health and medicine built into our Treaty 6. And I think about the Crown and the settlers, they can do or not do whatever in regards to healthcare and medicine. But it does, you know, come to us that we have that responsibility to maintain our health so that we can honor that treaty as well. Because like my great grandfather said, it's incumbent on us and our health to be maintained so that that treaty is honored. And so I think, you know, you have to keep that in mind when you think about health and find something that you like to do. And if you don't like sports, because I know it's not for everybody,
yes,
but find something that you can do. And that can be a challenge. I'm, you know, a lot of the research I'm doing lately, I'm considering how ableism is taken into account in this. And not everybody has the physical, mental, spiritual capabilities to do sports. But yeah, I think just, you know, find something that you can do and you know, just try to commit to doing it with that in mind of maintaining your health for not only yourself, but for the community, your family, the land. And yeah, because I know that, you know, I'm thinking about trying to do something that you don't like. And it's like you're, you know, with work too, you know, you don't always get to do a job that you love to do. And I think back to some of the jobs that I've done in my life, and, you know, like working at a fish plant and, yeah, working in restaurants. But my friend Ivan Eagletail told me once, you know, like doing those kind of jobs, it provides good energy for you and for the people that benefit from that work that you do in like a karmic fashion. And because if you're doing something like that, you're helping to feed people, and that just provides good energy for all the people involved. And so if you think about that work aspect of training and doing work on your health and fitness, it's a good way to look at it, I think.
It's a beautiful way to look at it. Oh my gosh, you know. And but what's his name, Eagletail, told you?
Yeah, Ivan.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Those are wonderful words, you know. And our people have such wonderful minds. And I believe it's in our DNA. You know, and I'd hear like what he was saying. And different messages, you know, from our people. Be careful and sincere with your words. Believe what you're saying. Don't play with language. When you speak, believe it. Live it. Be alive. You know, and look for the goodness. Society in some ways is trained to look for weakness and mistakes, not about the goodness. I was thinking about you as you're speaking. I'd love to see you biking in a competition. I'd say, there, he's one of ours. That's Elijah, man. You know, and I was imagining that, you know, because it's a good feeling to see our people involved, being part of. We have a right to. I hear some people say we're in a colonial state. I know there's still some colonial practices in place, but I don't believe we're in a colonial state. If we were, you would not be able to ride in competitions at a high level, like you were in the Yukon. You can do it, and you can speak your language. You can say your words. You know, so my message to the people is the first step is to forgive yourself, to apologize to yourself for the harm you may have done to your body. And tell your body you're going to find a way to bring gifts to your own body, whether it's movement or medicine, hearing aids, whatever you need. You know, Nashreen, go for it. Go get it. And to live the beauty way of life. Create beauty around you. And to remember, we're all role models. There's somebody watching us, especially us adults, and it's the children. You know, when I think about my role models around sports and recreation, I think of Jim Thorpe.
Yeah.
Tom Longboat, Billy Mills, Sonny Sixkiller playing football in Washington State University are people that rose up. You know, and the hockey players, you know, that young bear that plays professional hockey. You know, so we can go there. But the main thing is to take care of what you have and to do what's good for you. And maybe our youngsters will do what some of us dreamed of. I dreamed of winning marathon races. But now that I talk about taking care of the body, maybe youngsters will listen and they can do it, which would be great. And I'd just like to add, I'd like to thank all of the coaches in our communities, you know, because they're there. And I was one of them at one time. We take the kids out, track and field, fastball, soccer. There's people that train children on barrel racing, and you know, where they do a rodeo and stuff. I'd just like to thank all those coaches. Hockey coaches, fastball, cycling, whatever, weightlifting, boxing, thank them. And to, you know, because I heard a lot of them, and there were a lot of good people saying it's not all about winning. It's about doing our best. I would hear some coaches talk like that to their youth. And I talk to teenagers like that. We're going to win a friend today. Even if we don't win the race, we're going to win our friend. So I'd just like to thank you again, Elijah Buffalo. And one day I'd like to meet you or see you in, doing biking.
Yeah.
It would be a thrill for me to see that.